And welcome. It is Your Money. I'm Susie Jones, your host, along with Peg and Bruce, and reminding you that you can call 1-800-666-ADVICE at any time to get a question answered. You can also email questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. But for the next hour, we have you at 651-461-9226. Here is the founder of Wealth Enhancement Group and financial advisor Bruce Helmer and Senior Vice President Peg Webb. But welcome to both of you.
Good morning, Susie. Good morning, Bruce.
Hello, Peg Webb. Hello, Susie Jones. Hello, listeners. Thanks for being with us. Hey, Susie, Peg and I today are going to talk about something. Peg, I think it's a really good topic, but listeners might not be aware of what we're talking about. We're going to talk about something called lifestyle creep. And no, we're not calling anybody a creep. We mean creeping or lifestyle inflation or increasing. And what we mean by that is, you know, all people, all humans have what I call the propensity to consume, meaning as we have access to more money or we have more income, we feel a pressure or we have a tendency to spend more as we have access to more. It's just human nature. Now, some people are worse at that than others, but we all have it, I think, to a certain degree. And when we talk about lifestyle creep, let me start with a quick example and I'll throw it to you. Let's say somebody makes $100,000 a year, and I know not all of our listeners make $100,000 a year, but it's easy to do the math in my head. And let's say this person that makes $100,000 a year has a goal to save or invest 15% of their income. Well, that's $15,000 a year. That's easy math. But let's say they get a promotion, Or over the course of a couple of years, they get a couple of raises, and now their income is 10% higher. Now they're making $110,000 a year, but they're still only saving $15,000 a year. Their savings and investing, which they wanted to be 15% of their income, which now should have increased by $1,500 or now be $16,500 a year, that doesn't go up, and all this extra income goes into lifestyle, goes into spending, goes into getting things that we want that maybe we don't need. And wants are more persuasive motivator than things that we need to do. We're more likely to spend things, money on things we want than on things we need. So that's what lifestyle creep is. That's what we mean. And we're going to talk today about the reason you want to avoid it and maybe some strategies for how to avoid it. Peg?
Yeah, Bruce, we have had such a privilege of living through all these people's lives, right? And a lot of times I compare my life to them. And when they're talking about spending, or there's this huge excitement because they just got this big bonus or they won the little lottery, and it's just almost like free money. But right now, the times that we are in right now, this lifestyle creep seems to be on the rise, as a general rise in inflation is accompanied by still strong consumer spending. I mean, people out there are spending, although there is some little signs now that consumer spending may be slowing because of the higher interest rates. And the higher interest rates are kind of stuck at that high level. But sometimes with lifestyle creep, people say, oh, I just got this huge bonus, and I've been looking at these luxury goods for a long time and saying, you know, this is what a lot of people say, I deserve this. You know, your mind, you can convince your mind that you've done very well, you've been disciplined, now it's time to spend on some fun things. But as that lifestyle creep continues to happen, inflation is here right now. So with inflation, that kind of causes people for concern. But as you're earning more, you still believe that you can spend more. It just goes hand in hand, right? I got the bonus, I got the raise. Oh, this is like discretionary money, but really, is it? So there's other reasons. Today we want to talk about kind of how do you avoid that lifestyle creep, and what can you do to create discipline within your financial household. So some of the other reasons that you might need to avoid is you've already got a lot of debt. So when people get extra money, the first thing that they do think about is, oh, I'm going to pay down some debt. They'll say, oh, my car, I'd love to get that new fancy car that my neighbor has instead. Also, everybody has to have an emergency fund. You just don't know what tomorrow's going to bring or what's going to attack you if your roof, falls down or you have a tornado and the insurance isn't going to cover everything. Everybody needs an emergency fund. So, you can get yourself where you feel like you're just so in debt. And once again, Bruce, you and I witnessed this. People don't say, oh, I'm going to pay off all that debt with my windfall. They're looking at how can I enjoy life even more with the money I just got. So let's just talk a minute about early in your life, when you just start as an adult. Hopefully some people have given you good tips, meaning your parents, your friends, the school, about how do you set yourself up financially, and it starts early in your life. So you may be a student and you're just going out in the workforce. That alone is an adjustment. But if they offer you, a 401k or some type of a savings plan, that's the best thing you can do. And a lot of these companies will match it. And that match is actually free money. But when they offer you this 401k or this 403b and they take money out of your check, I call that hiding money from yourself. Like before you would get it in your checking account, how great is it that someone else pulled money from you, put it in a savings account, and you kind of mentally don't even really realize it's there? Bruce?
Yeah, and that's a great point. A couple thoughts I had, Peg, while you were articulating this. The participating in a company retirement plan, 401k or whatever it is, and we've talked about that a lot on the program before, that participation is just, so easy because, again, as humans, we do learn to live on what we get, on what we receive. So if that contribution to the retirement plan is withheld from our paycheck, we live on the paycheck we get after all the taxes are taken out and the other things that come out of our paycheck. We adapt and we live on it. I've often said, and I love that you use the expression hiding money from yourself, if we had to have the personal responsibility to write a check out twice a month or 24 times a year, and for the same amount that's withheld from our 401k, many people would not do it 24 times. There'd be a lot of times we'd find a reason to say, oh, I can't do it this month. I have to get this thing or that thing, or I bought this. And so I love the automatic participation, and it's just withheld. And I also love what you said about a matching contribution, because if you're not participating in the plan, you're literally leaving money on the table. If your employer will match your contribution. So I'm so glad you went there. But the other thought that I had, again, leading into it, I was thinking, or the example I gave was like an increase, but you talked more about, and I think logically so, about a windfall. What if I got a bonus, or what if I had some unexpected non-recurring increase in my income? That's what I think can really sabotage people, because Peg, I've always said, and I know you've seen it too, it's one, let me put numbers to it. Let's say you're somebody that's gotten used to living on $75,000 a year and you can live just fine. And then for some reason you go to $100,000 a year for a year or two or three, but then you go back down to 75. Now suddenly you go, I can't live on $75,000 a year. Once you get to a certain level, it's hard to go backwards. It's really hard to go backwards. And so again, this idea that lifestyle is going to creep in, we're not going to be as disciplined, or we're not going to be able to adapt. It's real. And again, it doesn't make you a bad person. It's human nature. And our message today is you have to be aware, you have to be on guard, and you have to have some strategies to prevent it. And the idea of participating and increasing contributions to my company retirement plan is one of the best ways to do that, to make sure that you're still putting money away for your future. And really quickly, and I'm probably over talking, you know, I think some people are listening and going, yeah, but, you know, none of us is promised tomorrow. We want to have some fun now. We want to live for today. And I think, you know, that's true of a lot of people. We've sort of become an immediate gratification society. You and I are not against people having fun. You and I have had fun in our lives. But I think you can have a balance. You can live for today and have fun for today and still save and invest and build something for your so you can have the retirement that you want also. Peg?
Well, and I think the basics of math, people have to understand the power of compounding. So, yes, we see clients get a significant promotion or a raise, and they're off already buying the bigger house, the nicer car. They're setting up a vacation, the vacation of their life, those kinds of things. But the power of compounding, and I kind of wish we would brainwash our children, right, when they're little kids, is that, you know, there's this thing out there called generating interest on your interest. And I have educated many a people about the rule of 72. And all that is, it's a calculation that estimates the number of years it would take to double your money. And all you have to do is use some math here. If you have 4% and you divide that into 72, and you get 4%, that takes 18 years to double your money. But let's do an easier math drill. If I earn 7.2%, I would actually double my money in 10 years. And to me, when we coach people on that, they go, oh, 10 years, that's not even that far out. And I could double my money. It's educating people about what you can do with that money. You know, it's easy to say, I'm going to go buy a car, buy a vacation, that kind of thing. And I don't feel like you can't get out there and live. But the power of compounding is so powerful that once people understand it, you take a look at what you're going to use your money on and you say, oh, I think I'm going to need that money. And by the way, we witness people do need that money. One day you're going to say you want to retire and you have to create a paycheck on your money you've saved for the rest of your life. So you have to have some discipline of knowing how much do I need to save to be able to not have to work for my entire life. So you have to have a good savings and investment knowledge and discipline. And that's what's hard for people. So they come to us and they say, can you help me? How much should I save? You know, how much am I willing to spend? We almost give them the freedom to spend because they fully understand how much they can spend and still do this power of compounding over time. Bruce?
Peg, I'm glad you went there. That's such a great example because, and again, what it really comes back to is something that we talk about frequently on this show. It comes back to your core values and your goals. So it's easy to spend money in the short term for immediate gratification. And you always talk about visualization, but if you visualize your goals, if it's a higher priority to you to be able to retire at a certain age with a certain lifestyle and help your kids and grandkids and tithe to your church and all these things that are priorities, if you really focus on that, then it's easier to have that discipline that you're talking about and pass on that short-term gratification of whatever it is you're thinking of spending money on. So I'm really glad you went there with showing the power of compounding and what a little bit consistently over a long period of time can actually grow to and the difference and the value it adds to your life and ability to retire sooner with the lifestyle you want. Peg?
Remember how we kind of said we should have a psychology degree, you know, not just a financial degree, but because we're often coaching people on don't make snap decisions, you know, don't buy things impulse, like with an impulse where you're just like, oh, well, normally if you see something, maybe you leave the store, you discuss it with your partner, you know, whether this is a good idea or not. And then a lot of times after you walk out of that store, you really think, nah, that's not a big deal. Because we all can get very excited about something, especially when it's a physical thing and maybe it's the red convertible you've always wanted. It's hard to sit with somebody and justify and talk to them about, can you really afford this? Because you seem like you're the Debbie Downer. But yet people hire us to be able to coach them on that. The other thing is if you have friends that have more money than you have. This with my clients, they say, well, they go out to these fancy restaurants and they're always inviting us. And then we split the bill. And technically, we can't really afford that. We can't afford to have, you know, a couple bottles of wine and the food that they have. And how do you say, no, you know, we just can't afford that. Or you take turns. You go to a restaurant that, you know, that you invite them to and things like that. And then I do believe everything has to be written down, like what you're spending your money on. Wealth Enhancement Group has an excellent worksheet that has so many categories. And they make you write down, it's voluntary for you, but they want you to write down, like do an audit on today. I think people are spending so much on those streaming, you know, TV stations. Like they all want to watch their favorite movies or favorites on, you know, Netflix and Prime Video. And we've got so many today that people are spending $400 or $500 a month on that. And think about it. If you could put some of that money away and compound it, as we said, then we're trying to coach our clients to do that. And then also, you know, it's hard with insurances, taxes, utilities, you know, those are all going up because inflation is here. And so the squeeze on people's monthly income right now is hard because things are costing more. So they're asking us for more advice on what should I cut back on? How is this going to change my plan? The people who come to us, Bruce, they tend to want to know, right? Am I on track or am I not on track? But there's a lot of you out there listening that walk around every single day not knowing. I'm not quite sure how you can do that. But there's lots of people out there that don't really know, Bruce.
Yeah. So maybe you kind of started to segue there, but I want to kind of draw a line in the sand here. And we got a few minutes left in the first segment. So hopefully we've made the case for people understanding what lifestyle creep is and why you want to avoid it. I hope we've made our case. But let's talk a little bit. And again, I think you started to go down this road, Peg, but let's make it clear. What are some ideas or for some strategies if we've convinced people that they want to avoid lifestyle creep? How do they avoid it? What are some things that we would tell them?
Well, I mean, do you really need a car? You know, so some of the people that live in these major cities, you know, maybe public transportation is cheaper. Do you really need that big house? And I know there's a lot of our clients that are transitioning to a smaller you know, square footage, and that actually cuts costs on all sorts of things like insurance, taxes, utilities. And then there's also just a lifestyle change of, you know, looking at your budget. You know, I said you have to kind of keep track of what you're taking in and where is it going, Bruce?
Yeah, and I think to a lot of listeners, the word budget is like a curse word. They don't want to hear about budgeting. And I think, Peg, you're absolutely right that people should budget. You know, what percentage of your income has to go to taxes? What percentage has to go to your mortgage payment? What percentage goes to food? What percentage goes to lifestyle? What percentage is discretionary or fund money? I think people should do that, but I get that that's a buzzkill, and I get that people don't want to do that, and I get that that's laborious. So I'm going to use myself as an example, and it's not a recommendation. It did work for me, but it's not what I think most people should do. Like listeners and like a lot of people, I don't like to budget. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of minutia. But I've always had a philosophy that if I commit to saving and investing a certain percentage of my income, and I do that first, then it kind of doesn't matter where I spend the rest of my money. Because the reason we want a budget, for the most part, is so that we're saving and investing for our future, and we're not spending everything living for today. So I just personally, at a pretty young age, made that commitment that I'm going to do that first, no matter what. X amount of dollars every month is going away for my future, and then I lived on the rest. So that can work also. But again, the idea of a budget or knowing where your money's going, because the other thing, Peg, and I know we've only got about a minute left, but the other thing is someone says, I got a 10% increase or whatever, but you don't get to keep all that, right? You're going to pay 20 or 25% in taxes on that 10%. So how much is really coming in? Peg, last word.
Well, the last word would be just the old thing is true. Live a little, but not too much. That's what we tell people.
All right, Susie, I know we're about due for a break. When we come back, we'll wrap up this discussion on lifestyle creep, but we definitely want to get listeners involved in the second half of the show.
All right, very good. And we'll let them know that they can call 651-461-9226, or they can text their question to 651-461-9226. Once again, it is your money, and we want you to be part of the second half of the program. 651-461-9226. Maybe you are experiencing this lifestyle creep. 651-461-9226. It is your money. Welcome back to the second half of the program. Reminding you again, you can call 1-888-6-ADVICE 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and someone will get back to you at Wealth Enhancement. You can also email your questions to yourmoneyatwealthenhancement.com. But for the next 25 minutes, we are here. We are available. Bruce Helmer, the founder of Wealth Enhancement Group and financial advisor, is here. Peg Webb, senior vice president and financial advisor. And the number to call or text is 651-461-9226. Again, right now, call 651-461-9226 if you have a question for Bruce or Peg. Welcome back to both of you. Bruce? Peg?
Susie, can
yes.
you hear me?
Yeah, we
oh,
seem to have lost good. Bruce, but here you are. We're talking about lifestyle creep and savings and numbers, and we invited people to be part of the show, Peg, at 651-461-9226. Is Bruce back on the line? I think I can hear him now. Bruce?
Hi, Susie, you got me?
Yep.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know what happened.
That's all right. You're back. You want to get a question?
So I was just saying. I think we covered everything we wanted to about lifestyle creep. Was there anything you wanted to add, Peg?
No, what I was just going to say is that probably the two main points that I want people to take away from is hiding money from yourself, and also the power of compounding. Even if you have to just Google those two things and read about it a little bit, it's a life changer. Bruce?
No, that's excellent. That's a good way to segue into letting listeners drive the show, Susie.
Yeah, and we just got a question along those lines. This texter writes this morning, question for Bruce and Peg. My 16-year-old daughter starts her first job on Monday. She's going to split her paycheck, half to savings, half to spend. Is that a good ratio to start, Peg?
That's amazing. That, I mean, 50% savings and 50% take home. If you can afford that, and we do hear from a lot of young people, and they actually are so excited to get out in the workforce and make a difference. But a lot of young people that my clients have told me about have, you know, if they use public transportation, they're now on a bike. Or if they, you know, want to get an apartment and share utilities, you know, rent and utilities with someone else to try to save money. you know, they don't maybe not get in a trap of going to fancy restaurants, because now you're going to meet all new people with your work job and you're going to get new friends. And so it takes more control than ever. But I would say that's amazing. 50% saved and 50% to live. Bruce?
Yeah, that's phenomenal. And again, I applaud, you know, the parenting here, and I applaud the child that, you know, that I think it's really, it teaches financial responsibility. It teaches, you know, just life responsibility and being an adult if you can, you know, get a job and you're a kid. And I know that kids are busy, and I know that there's a philosophy that they've got their whole life to work. Let them enjoy being a kid. But, you know, Peg, I know you and I, we've talked about it on this show a lot. We started working at really young ages. That's the life we knew. And I, you know, and I know times change, and I know that, you know, kids today don't have the same experiences that we did, but I'm really impressed by the texter. And yeah, if you, I mean, that percentage to save half of it is outstanding, especially if they can stick to it. And the other thing I wanted to mention really quickly, a little off topic, but that's my point. The questions, listeners, don't have to be on this lifestyle creep topic. It can be on any financial topic. And Peg, I want to throw one in here that is off topic, because I heard it a couple of different times this week from different people independently of each other. And I'm paraphrasing, you know, a couple different people and formulating one single question. But people have asked me, they've heard us on the show talk about taxes being on sale and the sunset of the tax law. And now there might be a planning opportunity to do some things while taxes are low. And they want to know what we mean by that. What do we mean by taxes are on sale right now? Are you getting that question? Because I got it several times in the last week from totally different sources unrelated to each other.
Well, I think the reason you're hearing it, and I'm hearing it as well from clients, is the media is starting to pick up on this, that there is a deadline. You can either say December 31st, 2025 or January 1st, 2026, in that there are a bunch of tax provisions. It's the 2018 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act that changes the tax bracket. It changes the tax bracket. So all of us were at one particular bracket, and now we have a little lower percentage. But in conjunction with that, they raised the standard deduction. So they being, you know, the IRS. And so they raised the standard deduction, and meaning that if you were in these tax brackets and you can't write off as much as you used to in your itemized deduction, so then everybody became standard. So there's about 70% of every taxpayer that just goes standard now. Now, the brackets are dramatically different, meaning they're going, if nothing happens before December 31st, 2025, we're all going back to those higher brackets. Now, there's probably going to be negotiations about what you can itemize when you're in these higher brackets, but that's what they're talking about. And then there's also a big, 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 very large amount of money that we can die with today without having to give the government part of our wealth. So right now, each of us is like $13 million we can die with, and it's almost like an extra tax, right? It's hey, you have so much wealth that anything over $13 million apiece, $26 million as a couple, you're going to then pay about 30%, maybe more, to the government when you die. So there's a lot of planning that you can do ahead of time. And Bruce, I'm glad you brought this up, because our firm, we are actually, we've created a webinar. You're going to hear a lot about this, because we want our clients to be educated, and we'll share that information with you. What are some of the steps that you can do now to take advantage of these lower brackets, Bruce?
Yeah, in fact, I think this is even on the schedule. I think we're going to do an entire show on this in the upcoming weeks, but I wanted to mention it because, again, we'll take any and all questions from listeners, but that's one that I'm getting a lot. And Peg, is it, I'm not even clear. So I know that, you know, the lost sunsets and the brackets are going back to the what they were before. So a lot of people might see an increase. You mentioned the standard deduction. Is that also going to resort back to a smaller standard deduction, or is that part locked in?
It, anything's on the table. I mean, you mean just with the sun setting, it's going to revert back. So that means okay. that we all would be able to itemize more. And I have a hard time believing that this is just going to revert back to what it was. I think there's going to be some changes in between. We are in a political election year, you know, so some of this change just based on who's the president at the time and how quickly they might react. But we're coaching our clients already now and taking advantage of these low brackets because some things you have to do ahead of time. You can't wait till the last minute and get everything done paper-wise. Bruce?
Yep. Okay. I'm sorry, Susie. I didn't mean to hijack the show. Let's go back to listeners.
All right. It is 651-461-9226. A texter writes, is it worth it for me to put away $25 a paycheck? I have high student loans to pay back. And so even if that small amount, what do you say to that, Peg?
Well, here you have to do, you have to weigh, and student loans have an interest rate. Right. So you're paying it. Not only are you paying some principal down, but they're charging you interest to carry your loan. And to me, it depends on what that interest rate is. So right now we can easily at this current time, we can easily make 5% on a savings account or a money market. Right. But if the loan is at 7% or some of them are 10%, then we might encourage you to put more towards that loan in the short term. Now, if there's still some chance that you would get those loans paid for, you know, with some changes that the government is making, then I don't see a problem with $25 if you want to just start saving. And if it starts mentally for you, like a basis of a start, believe me, that's actually almost more dramatic than not starting a savings account. You just have to start making it a pattern, and then I think you'll be successful in the end. Bruce?
Peg, that's a great answer. I would just add, you know, again, you mentioned that part of the consideration is the cost of the debt, right? What is the interest rate on the debt? So, and not to oversimplify this, but if somebody comes to me and they say, you know, I want to engage you as a financial advisor. I want to invest with you. And we dig into the situation and it turns out that they have a significant amount of, let's say, credit card debt at double digit interest rates, you know, 10.9, 12.9, 15.9, really high interest rates. I might literally tell them, you don't want to invest with me yet because there's no investment that we can coach you on that we know will earn a rate of return higher than the cost of that debt service. The most economically efficient thing for you to do would be to liquidate that debt. And I might even go so far as to give them some tips on how to go about doing it. And I might say, okay, here, do this. And when the debt's liquidated, call me back again. Then you'll have some investable money or discretionary money when you've liquidated that inefficient debt. So the cost of the debt matters, but also the opportunity cost or the opportunity gain of where am I going to put that money if it doesn't go to debt. So you gave the example of a simple 5% interest-bearing account, which is logical for a lot of people. But if it's somebody that's trying to determine, should I put more money in my 401k or pay down debt? Well, on the 401k, you not only have the return on investment, whatever that is, but you also have it reduces your tax liability because you get a deduction for the contribution and you might save, you know, 20 or 25% in taxes by applying that money to your 401k. And maybe there's an employer match. So you have to add everything together and now say, economically, do I have more gain here than the cost of the debt service? So it comes back to what we talk about a lot, the discussion between efficient debt and inefficient debt or bad debt and good debt. But so it's a great question. So again, like you said, depends upon the interest rate, and it also depends upon what is the choice of where that $25 is going to go. But the long story short, $25 a paycheck, say that's 50 bucks a month, that's $600 a year. It may not seem like much, but $600 a year over a lot of years, applying earnings to it, is going to be a lot of money. Doing something, whatever you can, is better than doing nothing. Susie?
651-461-9226. This texter writes, I'm 62, widowed, retired 2 years, receiving husband's Social Security, then will get mine in the future. I'm in the process of converting $2 million from my traditional IRA to Roth. If need be, is it horrible to pay out of the traditional IRA to cover the conversion taxes?
Wow. There's a lot of things to unwind here, Susie. So, Peg, couple of issues. So, we probably have to talk a little bit about how Social Security works for this person. And then and for listeners that don't know, converting traditional IRA to Roth IRA as a strategy can be efficient, but people need to understand there's a cost to doing that conversion, being the taxes. The amount that you move from a traditional IRA to a Roth IRA is treated as a withdrawal from that IRA, and that's a taxable event. And it might make sense, but I think part of the question here is, do I do this all in one tax year, or do I do it a little bit at a time over a number of years? So a lot of things to unwind here. Peg?
Well, the first one being you're 62, and sorry to hear for your loss. Excuse me. Sorry to hear for your loss. At 62, the good news is Social Security will allow you to take Social Security and wait for you to turn your own on because they're using your husband's record. So this is what actually a lot of people miss, I find. So become knowledgeable or seek out a financial advisor if you're, you know, younger than full retirement age and you have a loss, because if you don't claim it, then it's not like the Social Security Administration is just going to start sending you checks. So be familiar with that. The $2 million traditional IRA. So what they're talking about is traditional IRAs is where you put money in and you probably got a deduction for it, or you might have put it in through your work 401k, and you've had the luxury of compounding your interest and not having Uncle Sam take any of it. That's called tax deferral. But at this point in time, when you have a $2 million account and it's all taxable, you have some choices. You can pull out all the money, pay, you know, the tax, which is going to be probably 40 to 60%, depending on what state you live in. And one of the things that some of our clients do is they look at taking a portion or the entire amount, depending on how much it is, and do what's called a Roth conversion. And what that means is you take that money that's in a bucket and it's tax deferred, and it will continue to grow tax deferred, meaning you're going to have more tax deferred money that you're going to have to pay tax on longer down the road. But if you did it now and you converted it to a Roth IRA, a Roth IRA then becomes, it becomes tax-free, provided that you hold it for 5 years or 59 and a half. So there's a lot of rules around that. But it sounds like you want to get it from this tax-deferred to this tax-free compounding, but you're willing to give the IRS a lot of money to do it. So on the $2 million, the question was, where do I get the money to pay the tax? So a lot of times when people do these Roth conversions, they'll take, not many people take $2 million, but let's just keep it that way. Let's take $2 million, and the texter said, can I pay the tax within the Roth IRA? Absolutely, yes. What would happen is, let's say it's $400,000 worth of taxes, you can take the $1.6 million and get it over to your tax-free Roth and use that money to pay the tax. That would be the last thing that I would do. I don't like to take money out of an IRA to pay the tax. I like people to use other outside money to pay the tax. Now, in this case, because it's so large, you know, that might be your only option. The other thing I would say here is I don't do a lot of Roth conversions when the market appears to be at an all-time high. Because what's happening is you're selling out of your deferred bucket and you're going into a tax-free growth bucket. But I like to do conversions when the market has a downturn, because that way you're not paying as much tax. And I'm a firm believer that over time, the market would come back. So the timing, I would think about the timing as well. Bruce?
Peg, that's so smart. I'm glad you went there. I wasn't thinking along those lines, but you went kind of to the value of the account or where's the market at right now. And that's totally logical. I never thought of it. But the converse to that is, and we already talked about it earlier in this show, for a lot of people, tax rates might be lower right now than they will be in the future. So you have to consider both. You have to consider, in terms of doing a conversion, where's the value of the account at, and we can forecast this. We never know for sure what the IRS is going to do, where taxes are going to go, what tax laws will be. But we can anticipate future income, and we can project, you know, what taxes are going to be. So someone that might say, oh my gosh, I would never convert $2 million all at once because that's such a huge tax burden. Well, maybe you can do a forecast and say, whether I do a little bit at a time or whether I do it all at once, I'm going to be in the same tax bracket no matter what anyway. So why not accelerate it? At which point then Peg might say, well, if you're going to accelerate it, why don't we wait for a retraction in the market? So you can see why this, you know, these strategies become very complicated, very complex. And we say this on the show all the time, Peg, most of the time, these things are not an exact science. We don't know for sure what markets are going to do. We don't know for sure where tax rates are going to be. We don't know for sure how long you're going to live. So we make reasonable assumptions, and then based on those assumptions, we devise our strategies. Peg, I think we got about a minute and a half. I'll give you the last word.
Yeah, I also would consider, and I've done this before, where you kind of dollar cost average into the Roth conversion. So you could just have an automatic something going on where you convert $100,000 every month, and that way you'll maybe catch some highs and lows of the conversion timing. Bruce?
Yep, you do it in reverse. Just like dollar cost averaging can be an efficient strategy to get into the market, it can also be an efficient strategy to get back out of the market. So again, the texter, a lot of, you know, and I agree with you, Peg, and I was insensitive not to say so at the beginning. If she's only 62, I don't know how old her deceased husband was, but that's awfully young to lose your husband. So I hope you're doing well emotionally. Financially, to have $2 million, you're obviously in a, by most people's measuring stick, an enviable position, but so sorry for your loss. And Susie, looking at my little stopwatch here, tells me we're about out of time.
Yeah, we are. But a great show. And if anyone did not get their questions answered, you can email them to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. Or you can call this number 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 1-888-6-ADVICE. Again, that is 1-888-6-ADVICE. Make it a great day. It is Your Money.